Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting of the Planning Advisory Committee to order on April 24th at 7 p.m. I'm going to begin by acknowledging that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. And I will review the procedure for public to address the committee. An opportunity will be provided to all citizens to address the committee on each agenda item shown on this agenda or added to the agenda by the committee. Individuals who wish to address the committee are asked to note the following. On each member, what do we have going on? Okay, no worries. On each matter on the committee's agenda, the chair will seek public comment upon the completion of staff's presentation. Each person shall state their name. All statements and questions shall be directed to the chairperson. Presentations shall be limited to 10 minutes. Persons wishing to address the committee a second time will be given the opportunity to do so once all others in attendance have had the opportunity to address the committee. Persons addressing the committee for a second time shall limit their presentations to 5 minutes. Anyone wishing to address the committee on a matter not included on this agenda can have the matter added to the next meeting's agenda by contacting Jeff Merrill, Director of Planning, at 902-541-1340 or by emailing at planning@modl.ca. Okay, and with that, I'm going to seek an approval of the agenda. Or do I just announce it approved? Do I need to have a motion for that?
No, I don't think we need
that anymore. No, we don't do that anymore? Okay, in that case, I will approve the agenda. Approval of the minutes for Thursday, February 20th, 2025. Does anybody have any additions, omissions, anything that they want to add to the minutes? In that case, those minutes are hereby approved. We'll move on to item number 5, Planning Advisory Committee Matters. 5.1, Eastwood Estates Cluster Style Land Lease Community Development Agreement, Lot FE-1, McCullough Road, PID 60709383. And who am I turning this over to? Ms. Elegindy, go ahead.
Oh, how do I, why don't I never learn how to duplicate the screen?
It's because you had to,
okay.
It now started and it should double screen it. Go slideshow. For some reason, if you have the presentation open, it doesn't like it.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. So we will discuss the development agreement process for Lot FE1 McCullough Road. It's a land lease community. My name is Ella Gindy, Planner 2. Agenda just for what will be the process of the presentation. We'll start with some introduction, the development agreement criteria, and the proposed development, so summary, site plan summary. You all have a physical copy because I'm sure on the screen it might won't have the same resolution, and some feedback that we received from external agencies and also some research that was done by staff. What's the process and steps? And then you'll have the chance to for some question period. And if you have any questions that you might want to refer to the developer or the engineer, they're over there, so you can do that at the same time once that presentation is over. So development overview, the applicant is Jalen Enterprise. The proposal is for a land lease community. It is considered to be a cluster development under the cluster development regulations because it has more than 6 units on one single lot. So around up to 23 modular single-family dwellings. In the site plan, you will see 21. But the applicant, when they applied for the permit, they stated 23 units. The location is McCalla Road. It's an unzoned area, so there's no zoning requirements except from the cluster regulations that are located in our new municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw. As you might know, there was a first reading that was done in January 28th, but since then we had another first reading done on April 22nd. So technically, the developer is not mandated to go through a development agreement process. However, they decided to enter into one because it's a land lease community. Not all units are going to be at once placed on the lot. It's being purchased, that's when the actual unit will be placed. So it depended on if the units are purchased or not. So for them, they realized that a development agreement, going through that process will be an easier process. So when those units will be placed on the ground, it's by the contract that we have with them and not necessarily having to apply every single time. We did had a public information session on March 19th. Around 15 people, members of the public, attended, and we had a very prolific discussion where members of the public were able to ask the developer and the engineer questions and also the planning staff as well. In terms of, I already explained that, but in terms of policy and regulatory framework, they're not really abide by a development agreement. But through the new first reading that was done this week, it needs to align with Section 5.3 of a cluster development, meaning that the developer may enter into a development agreement if they see it fit. And Section 6, if they decide to enter into a development agreement, then they need to go through the development agreement process and the criteria that is listed under that section. And what the DA can regulate, it can regulate the accessing, servicing and phasing, and stormwater as well, looking at also emergency access of different servicing such as EHS, fire and RCMP, looking at traffic, fire safety, etc. Again, when it comes to the development agreement, really is under the discretion of the development officer, but in this case, there were several criteria that we asked the developer to provide. And again, this is what a development agreement means. It's specific design to a certain area and certain use. It's a legal contract between the municipality, between council and the developer. Their uses are used to be non-conforming with maybe the zone, but in this case, that's not relevant. We did some part of the what's good about development agreement and also aligns with council's priority is that it does require public consultation, and we had that as mentioned. Council decision can be appealed, and the minimum timeline for achieving or for getting the development agreement done is around 4 months. So there's two, if you look at the physical paper I gave you, you can see it's double-sided. There's one side that shows different phasing, but as you see in the purple, light purple or pink area above, that's where it's suggested to be the office space in the beginning, but then it will transform into a four modular unit housing. So there's four phases to this development. There is a private public road that is being designed, and it's around 6 meters, so it's two-way private road ending with a cul-de-sac, and also ditches on side and both sides, so 0.3 meters for the ditches. It aligns with what a two-way road should be. So if you can see the four phases, different phase has different units. So the red one is the first phase, the purple is the second, yellow is third, and then the light blue at the top is the final phase when the offices turn into those modular homes. In terms of servicing and infrastructure, they will be connected to water services, to municipal water services, so there is no need for drilling wells on site. So it's a in terms of that, they have the option to connect. There will be two, in terms of sanitary, there's two on-site septic fields. Field A, as you can see on the either on the physical copy or on screen, it's for the 16 units, and field B is for 5 units. There is a stormwater retention pond, and in addition to that, there's ditches and catch basins. There are no units that are located within the 100-year floodplain, so there's no units that are susceptible of being flooded. And that's in terms of the site plan summary of it. If there's more questions in terms of that, you can always, after the presentation, ask the developer or the engineer. Some feedback that planning staff had to reach out to several agencies, such as different emergency services. From what we talked about with, we reached out to the fire department, RCMP, and EHS, and all said that the development has no issues with emergency access. Town of Bridgewater said there might be some minimal traffic impact that might be expected. We also reached to the school board, and there's no concerns there. Public Works did raise some concerns, but the developer did change the site plan in accordance with what the Department of Public Works requested. We did reach out to Department of Environment, not really with a response, but the developer did provide a letter of servicing of the septic approval from the Department of Environment. From planning staff, planning staff did do a desktop analysis to see if there is any habitat at risk or any environmental concerns. So there are no species at risk from a desktop analysis point of view. There are no species that are at risk that were identified on that piece of land. But there is a stream noted near the road, but there's no current setback regulations that we can require the developer to abide by in terms of distance from the units or the road to the waterway. We did have a public engagement. As I mentioned, around 15 members of the public attended. There were some questions about septic or flooding, water flow, fire safety, access to green space, road access during construction or garbage collection. And you can see, there was also feedback from the developer to answer those questions. So in terms of septic, Odora engineered confirmed that the septic fields are airtight designed to eliminate that type of odor risk. Also, in terms of flooding, members of the public mentioned that that it happened before that some trees due to clear cutting were blocking the stream that caused flooding. So that was something that was a raise of concern. And again, as I mentioned, the engineer confirmed that there is a 100-year flood event. The 100-year flood event was accounted for while they were doing the site plan design. And again, there's other comments that were done, like, for example, some green space does exist where the septic fields is, and there were some concerns of over clear-cutting of some vegetation. And in terms of road access during construction, the developer did say that they will help with communications during disruptions, mainly due to the early time when the development starts. In terms of garbage collection, that was something that was raised. Planning staff reached out to the Municipal Joint Services Board, where they said that the developer can reach out to them once the development is done, and they can work the waste collection assessment for that. And in terms of street lighting will be applied in some areas just in terms of safety. In terms of what are the steps, we are right now at step four. We're meeting with staff is presenting to the Planning Advisory Committee, asking the Planning Advisory Committee to make recommendation to council. If that happens, council will conduct first reading. After that, we'll follow a public hearing and a second reading. There will be a 14-day appeal period. If there won't be any appeals, the application is approved. In terms of just high-level summary. That type of development does support the statement of provincial interest regarding housing. It increases affordable housing in our area and especially in a serviced area, nearby goods and services and access to employment. So it aligns with council strategic priorities like economic development, quality of life and growth, but also climate change, as you're building on one site reduces sprawl. So in terms of DA process, it helps us to ensure that there's a regulatory alignment, and staff confirms that the preliminary there is preliminary compliance with policies and criteria. Should I move to the recommendation slide? Okay. And that's the planning staff recommendation for the PAC. And if there's any questions, we would welcome them now.
Are there any questions from committee members? Go for it.
So I actually have mine are directed to the engineer and developer, if that's okay. They may seem a bit weird, but that's the way I look at things. So my first question is, your plan shows, I'm assuming that they're single wide modular units. What if someone wants to put in a double wide?
So you come to the mic so they can hear you online as well.
Yeah, come on up to the mic and please introduce yourself. Just hold on 1 second, please. They're just going to turn the mic on, and then I'll get you to introduce yourself. Thanks.
Jay Richards, president of Jalen Enterprises, the developer. So it's single-section manufactured homes shown on the plan, but multi-sections could be possible.
My next question with that is, if a number of these units become double wides, is there going to be adequate spacing to get your 21 or 23 units on the site plan that you have?
Well, not likely as laid out, especially when considering setback requirements and decks and things like that. So I think if you're increasing the size of the modules, then that would take away from the overall capacity of units.
My next question is a sanitary, was on your sanitary fields that you've got. It could be an engineering question, but the way I translated what the drawings say is it's gravity feed from the modular unit to a holding tank, and then it's pumped uphill from a holding tank into the septic field.
Let Jeremy answer that one.
Jeremy Wyatt, civil engineer with Design Point. That's correct. So it'll be gravity distributed down to a central dosing tank that has a pump chamber built into the tank itself. And just due to the topography of the site, the first field is uphill from the lowest point. So to avoid having multiple pumps, we're bringing it down to one spot, pumping it back up the hill. And the septic field can be built out in phases as they sell more units. In addition to that, the septic field, Nova Scotia Environment allows you to use flow monitoring data when collected. There's stipulations on validating the data, but you can use that when available to reevaluate your septic calculations. So in terms of an adjusted density, after, I believe you need at least 6 units, but after a certain amount of units are built and flow data is collected, we can reassess the septic design, and it may be possible to reduce the footprint of the septic field. So that's sort of where the flexibility of total number of units come from. Back to your question about if there's double wide. So in terms of like wastewater capacity, there's flexibility around.
Okay.
So my next question that comes from that, I'm only used to gravity-fed systems. Yep. What happens when you lose power for an extended period of time?
So there's additional storage built into the chamber itself. There's usually a generator receptacle for a mobile generator that's built into the chamber itself. There'll be a control panel. So the operator would need to have a mobile generator available, similar to how like municipalities do their small pump stations, up to like 75 liters per second. In addition to that, usually during power outages, the inflow is significantly less because people aren't flushing their toilets and using their water as often. So because in combination of those three things, that gives somebody a little extra time to go get the mobile generator out. But that's in alignment with, you know, typical municipal pump station operation. Yeah.
But you're going to be on municipal water?
Correct, yep.
So you may not see that decrease in usage if you're on muni water.
Fair. That's just like an extra bonus, essentially. Yeah. But it's the generator receptacle is the main path of defense, I guess, for that. Yep.
Thank you for those questions.
Your points about multi-sections. It could be possible to have like an end entry that would take up a similar amount of space as a single section, plus decks on the side, but we'd have like entrances on the front and the rear, so it could be possible.
Setbacks.
Yeah, and still meet the setbacks, of course.
Okay, great.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Go ahead.
Hi, Gary Mailman, member at large. It's not a question about the project, but just more for clarification for myself. The water looks like it's running along the north side of the 103, and then I would say coming underneath the 103. Is that where the water's coming from? No? Nope. I'm looking at the water system schematic map labeled WA-01.
The water in McCulloch Road itself.
I'm just looking for clarification. I hadn't seen that before, and I'm just wondering if that's actually a water line.
Yeah, I believe that crosses and goes to Osprey Village. I believe is up. Yeah, so that's where that connection is.
So there is municipal water coming on the north side of the 103. It's for something coming up. I just want to confirm that your map is showing me correctly.
Yep, that's the latest GIS we have from the PSC.
Great, and I know it's a little picky, but not for you guys. But on page 4 of 7 of our staff report, it makes note of the Lunenburg County School Board. Lunenburg County School Board hasn't existed in probably 30 years. So
we send them an email to the maybe they changed their name, but when we send them an email, they responded, so they exist.
It's the South Shore Regional School Board now. Lunenburg
okay.
County hasn't existed in a long time.
So the name changed, but we received a response back.
Any other questions, Mr. Mailman?
No, I'm great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Excellent. I regret that I wasn't able to join the public engagement session. The one for this development specifically. Do you feel that all the public's questions and concerns were adequately addressed?
Yes, 100%. Okay. I think it went even above and beyond what we expected in terms of the public. Seems like they were satisfied with the answers that they received, and mm-hmm. it wasn't a lot of questions as much as feedback of this is my community, just letting you know what's going on. There were a lot of comments that not necessarily are related to the development itself, but maybe uses that are happening surrounding the development, mm-hmm. like a petroleum company, et cetera, or noise that's coming from the highway.
Okay.
Not necessarily concerns that are related to that development specific. It was more, it seems like more they are coming to meet and greet each other and ask some questions related to the development, but not necessarily
just being good neighbors.
Very exactly. That was it.
And so, one last question: the comment about the fence, is that along the same lines they were saying that they should have fences?
Yeah, they didn't say should. They said in terms of privacy, if there's something, is it something that a developer might take into consideration? They didn't ask for it specifically, but they said it might be a good thing to have.
Great. And are there any questions online from members of the public or Ms. Mack? No? We're not streaming. Great. Well, then why did I read the procedure for addressing the committee? Okay. All right. In that case, I guess we're looking for a motion to send this to council. Is that correct?
So I'll make that motion.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Well, I'll make the motion that was presented by staff. So I don't have it in front of me. So, oh, it's in. I'll move that the Planning Advisory Committee recommend that Municipal Council approve enter into a development agreement for the land lease cluster development of lot FE-1 McCullough Road, PID 60709383, as it is consistent with the development agreement requirements outlined in the Municipal Planning Strategy.
And a seconder? Seconded by Councillor Bell. All those in favor, please signify. Okay. And Ms. Meck, if you could let us know your vote.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, then that is carried unanimously. Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. All right, we're going to move on to our next item. Item 6.1, Osprey Village Secondary Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw Amendments. This is business arising from the minutes.
All right, thank you. At the last meeting in February, the committee may remember, we were dealing with three amendments to the Osprey Village Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw, and the committee asked for some clarification on those. So tonight I'm going to review the previous direction of PAC, recommendations for each areas. We'll talk about the updates to the outstanding feedback that we have since received from the since the last meeting, and we'll go over the next steps. So at the last meeting, and I do have a map as well. So there are three areas on the map. Those are the three areas that we're talking about. I'll come back to the map here in a second. The area one is the Harold Wynot Road, and we were asked to list the PIDs for that. So we've done that. It's in the yellow one down on the right side of the map. So further on, I have those PIDs listed out in the presentation. Area two was to clarify the two options for area two. And we have a slightly different recommendation for that one that I'll review here in a moment. And Area 3, again, was to proceed. The committee gave direction to proceed with the proposed amendments, and that was to go from the high-density residential zone to the open space zone, and that is the property 3 there, just off the Pine Grove Road. So starting with Area 1, so this is on the Harold Wynot Road. There's a couple properties there, currently zoned light industrial. They have potential for residential use, but when the bylaw, so previously there were, we had two bylaws. So this is two bylaws now combined into one. So we had the Osprey Village land use bylaw, and we had the industrial park land use bylaw. That's why when you see on the map, there's a bunch of unzoned things in between, because we had two plan areas, but it made sense to combine those together. However, when those were combined together, the light industrial zone has a high density residential component of 25 units per hectare. That works when it's on service, because anytime you have service properties, you want as many people as possible on those, because the more people, the less per person it costs for those services, and central services are expensive. However, in this area is unserviced, and it will not be serviced for sewer. It's unlikely that there would be water there, but definitely not sewer. It'd be very expensive to run a line to our sewer treatment facility. So when some developers looked at that site, it became challenging to meet the 25 units per hectare. So the recommendation from staff is to amend the land use bylaw to remove the high-density residential requirement for the specific PIDs. So there's four here. They're the ones that are outlined in the yellow. The large lot, I guess my pointer doesn't show up. How to make that laser pointer. So the municipality currently owns this large lot. So we have that listed, as well as these three here. There are developments on those other PIDs, but if it ever changed in the future, they would have that same ability to develop residential and not have to meet a minimum of 25 units per hectare. Ooh. So on the...
Do we want to pause for questions?
Oh,
for
yeah, you can do... Yeah, let's do one at a time.
Okay. So for Area 1, are there any questions from the members of the committee? Claire's mine. Okay.
I was just waiting to see if anybody else did, because I don't want to take up all the time. But yes, I have a few questions.
You go first, Mr. Mailman.
thank you. So I had some objections to this at the last meeting, and I still don't see anything that has been added to answer any of my objections. So the first question I have is, what has been deemed, other than I heard a couple developers say it's not financially feasible to service these lots? Has there been any studies undertaken, any engineering, septic engineers looking at that to give an approximate cost to put a septic system on that piece of property that would hold 25 units?
Yeah, so the municipality mentioned we own this property here. So we did look, and there was a development proposal a couple of years ago across the street where we did look at, we had our engineering department look at, you know, what give a very rough idea of what that would cost to service that, because at the time when we looked at it there was a new trail being developed, and thought, well, instead of the road you could run it down the trail instead of the road, but due to the location of our wastewater treatment facility, it's a very, very long run. So you'd just to connect those properties, our engineering said it's too expensive. You would have to have development all along that line to make it feasible. I can jump back to a map and just give an idea. So the properties are here, and our wastewater treatment facility is right down in this area here. So it has to go, I don't have a scale, but there's up here the scale is 300 meters. It was a long distance to...
So just for clarification, I actually wasn't really asking for the costs of how much to service it to a municipal sewer site, but how much the cost would be to put a on-site sewage system there, because we just had a developer that we just approved agreement for show that he can put a septic system on a piece of property for 23 units. And I'm sure they wouldn't go through the development if the septic system was going to be expensive.
Yeah, and so we did have a developer look at it, and it is feasible to service it on site. But to meet the density requirements, so it's a minimum of 25 units per hectare, which by the time you put the... they were struggling because they needed the property subdivided into two. I don't want to get too much into the detail of what the development proposal was at the time. But they struggled with being able to meet for both of the properties to be able to meet that minimum requirement. So that kind of raised the question of when we looked at it, it was like it makes sense to have that density requirement when it's a service lot, because you want to make sure that when you're putting infrastructure, you want to maximize the number of units that can go on that. So that's why that was there. And so we previously, as I mentioned, we had two bylaws, and that kind of got carried over from the serviced area of Osprey Village, which is the area on the left side of the map.
Well, the development that we just approved, that site, it has a proposal of up to 23 units, and it's only just over 5 acres. And the site that the municipality owns that is being asked for rezoning is over 12 acres. So it's double in size. I'm not sure how long ago this developer had looked at it, but in the report it says developers. So, I'm pretty sure that septic systems have changed in the recently as well too, and they're getting smaller and easier to put in. So I'm wondering why we don't have an updated on-site septic engineer report to go with this, because this is just kind of more like hearsay. Developers saying that it's too expensive to put a septic system in, when we just said yes to a site that's half the size for almost the same amount of units, and this is in an area where high density residential would be great. It'd be walking distance to a number of jobs, schools. So I'm still not sold, unless we're looking at, or unless the goal is to have as many new houses as possible, or is it still to meet the sentence that says to accommodate high demand of high density residential use?
Yeah, and I hear your concern. So the property would be 4.8 hectares, so times 25. So we're looking at there would be a minimum requirement of 120 units on that municipal property, plus you have to have space to put that system on. So it's a minimum of 25. It's not 25 units. So for every hectare, you have to have a minimum of 25 units under the current requirement.
Does that answer your question satisfactorily?
That actually raises a few more questions, because I hadn't realized from our last meeting that was a formula. It sounded like it was just that each PID you could put a minimum of 25 units on for residential, not per hectare. I don't remember seeing that anywhere in the...
That was news to me, too, and I'm wondering if I misread it as well. I don't know. So is it... Oh, yeah, it does say 25 units per hectare. Okay.
Where do you see that? Oh, down here.
Well, given that that is the case, and we're just trying to rezone this so that we can have appropriate residential use, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, go ahead.
So if this property was to get rezoned to single-family residential property, it says in our package that it was from developers. It's been said that a developer. How would the municipality go about offering that for disposal to interested individual parties?
Yeah, so... there could be a couple different processes. So the municipality could offer that up as kind of like a tender process where we welcome bids for that. The municipality could also, if there was a, like the Municipal Government Act allows the municipality, to make lands available to, say, a nonprofit housing organization, so then they could sell the lands that way. But at the end of the day, how that gets sold will be a decision of council.
Would the municipality consider subdividing that property into a hectare or so? So there could be still one PID or one parcel that could be developed into a 25-unit development, and versus just offering up the whole property and tell the developer, it's yours now, you do whatever you want?
Yeah, I mean, all those different options would be, that would be for council to decide that. But what we're talking about this evening is not really how we're going to, the municipality to sell that or dispose of that property. We're looking at removing that requirement that it would allow... gets rid of that minimum 25 units per hectare to recognize that it's unserviced property. Now, that doesn't mean that, if they can, where the municipality owns it, we would encourage a developer to build as many units as possible. We'd like to see as many housing units as possible. And when the municipality sells property, we can have performance clauses. So when we sell land, we can have a performance clause in there that if the developer doesn't meet those performance clauses, say we sell a property, we could say it has to be developed in a certain time frame. If it's not, then the municipality will... basically purchase the property back. So there are some, whoever we sell it, we wouldn't be It comes down to council has to make the decision. But from the staff side, like I'd be shocked if we were recommending that like single, like low density housing gets built there. Like we have a piece of property. The municipality would most likely be looking at to maximize the use of that property for residential purposes.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? I'll come back to you. Just want to make sure that everybody else is getting an option as well. So go ahead.
When I was going through, the recommendation is basically is that we were going to take away the requirement if it was to go to residential that we wouldn't have the high density, but we haven't said what we would be putting in its place for residential. And when I read the land use bylaws for Osprey Village, we only have two choices, R2 or R3. So R2 being medium density. So if that's the case, nobody could put in a, quote, single-family dwelling. It would have to be some level of medium density. And then if that's the only option we have, would we not state that in the recommendation?
Just give me one second here. I just want to jump to the land use bylaw there. So in the land use bylaw, so what we'd be doing would be removing the minimum density requirement, but in the properties would still be in the light industrial zone. So in the land use bylaw, it lists out all the properties that are or all the uses that are permitted in that. And then when we get down to 521X, a use permitted in the general commercial zone, including a use that's permitted in the institutional zone. Then we got to jump to the general commercial zone, which does allow for residential, and it has that so a residential use is permitted. And basically what we would be saying is a residential use would be permitted, but you wouldn't have that, you'd no longer have that minimum requirement attached to it.
Go ahead.
Okay, where I'm going from is in the land use bylaws, part 3, section 3.1 in zones, we only define two residential types of zone within Osprey Village, and that's R2 and R3. And then when you go to part 8 of that, the residential zone, again, it goes into the details of what a medium density and a high density is. At nowhere in that document can I find anything that refers to allowing what I would call an R1 type residential within Osprey Village.
Yeah, so it would be the industrial zone, which would permit residential in that zone. So it wouldn't be going to a residential zone.
If we're saying within an industrial zone, we no longer have to meet the high density because we don't have an R1, then the only option we have left is in that industrial zone, you would have to meet an R2.
If we jump down on page 37 of the agenda, so under amendments to the land use bylaw, we have the 5.2.1.2. So we'd be adding a new clause that would say, despite the uses permitted in 5.2.1X, under the requirements of, there's a lot of sections here. Anyway, section 6.3.1, the following lands listed by PID are exempt from a residential use meeting the high density residential minimum of 25 units per hectare. So it doesn't go to a high density or medium density. It just permits residential. So it is stripping the minimum density requirement. Mm-hmm. So then it would just leave residential. So that residential could be, it could be anything that's residential. There'd be no longer a density requirement for those four properties. It doesn't change, it's not changing the zone.
So then by that definition, I could, if I bought that land, I could come forward and say, well, I bought the land. You have nothing in your bylaws that say I can't put single-family dwellings. So because it's just residential now, I could take that approach. I know that's not what we want to do, but the way that's worded, you've left that door wide open, and I'm not sure that's what we really want the door to be left open on.
Yeah, you're correct. The door would be wide open. I guess the difference would be that the municipality, like we own, and I do realize we listed the other PID, three of the other PIDs there as well, but the property that the municipality owns, we have the ability to control. Like if we sell it, we can sell it, and it doesn't have to be single. Like council could say, we don't want single unit dwellings. We want townhouses or stacked townhouses or an apartment building, or, you know, the interest is, you know, I can't speak for council, but from the staff's perspective, like we'd be looking for as many housing units as possible. And we'd be still be able to do that because we own the property and we can sell that property with conditions and performance clauses in that agreement. And if they don't meet those performance clauses, including like the time, so we can put in clauses that say, you know, if you don't build within 3 years, we want that property back, because we want you to actually, if you're going to buy it from us, we want you to buy it and build, because we need the housing. So if for whatever reason that developer couldn't follow through on that, the municipality would acquire that back from that developer. But you're right. It could be a single unit on those. But from our property, highly unlikely that we would sell a property there and let it go to single units.
Mr. Mailman?
Is it Keith?
Yes.
We haven't met. I'm Gary. I actually have had the same concerns as what I was. That's what I was trying to get to, as Keith has. And you say that the municipality can sell it with all these restrictions. Somebody who is in the field of selling property, that would make that very, very unattractive to anybody that had to adhere to restrictions as you are talking about. And I think it would be just be more simple to have it as this is what you can do through a zoning, and instead of having restrictions and timelines. If that was the case, then why hasn't the municipality developed that property themselves and made it into affordable housing? So without there seems to be studies for everything. So without a study to actually show what can or cannot be done there in high-density residential, I am still not satisfied that enough work has been done on that parcel. The other two that our staff are asking, I have no problem with those two. This, just one, because if anybody has driven by this piece of property, this is a very valuable piece of property. It has views overlooking the golf course. It's in a prime location. Any developer that is looking at building homes, which they are over in that area, single-family homes, that is, I would not think that it would be affordable. I think they would be more on the higher end value. And like you said, you think you can put restrictions on that, but as a developer, I would kind of laugh and say I'm not interested. And then I think you'll be kind of be stuck again.
So that would be, you know, the municipality has, you know, other. You know, sold other lands with those similar type conditions. Mm-hmm. But again, that's, you know, it'll be up to the committee if you want to, you know, whether or not you want to make a recommendation or if you want to request. So the committee has the ability, you know, to recommend that we, you know, acquire a study for that. But I'll leave that with the committee.
Councillor Bell.
I think we were looking to have this land rezoned. We are not in the real estate business. We are not in housing, and we do not care to be in housing. You might be misinformed thinking that housing is a municipal responsibility, but it is not. We have worked with partners where opportunities exist to bring housing to this area, but we're not interested in rezoning this to make it attractive for us to be in the housing business. That's not something that is covered under the MGA. So if you can't come to a conclusion on this, then move to the next one. But we looked at this years ago, and we decided it cost too much to put water and sewer out there. Then the ability for water being directed to certain properties became a formula where we are directing the water where we know there's potential for development, not on a hearsay or what might be nice or make a nice view. So that's where it stands. So I'm fine.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. And I tend to agree that it would be up to an individual developer whether or not it was attractive to them to build on it. So I'll look to staff. Is there anything else that we need to know about this? Do we want to move on to the next area or finish this one off?
Yeah, it's up to the committee. You could make your recommendation now, or you can wait and do them all at the end. It's up to you, Madam Chair.
Let's finish up the specific area and then move on to area two. So do we have, yeah, we have a recommended motion.
Is that number one?
Yeah. Did you want to move that? Okay, go ahead, Councillor.
I move that the Planning Advisory Committee respectfully
recommend to Municipal Council that Council approve the proposed amendments to the Osprey Village Land Use Bylaw to allow lower-density residential development on the four on-surface properties of PID 604-31913, 605-825-66, 602-533-74, and 604-87824.
And do we have a seconder for that motion? Thank you. That's Mr. Hurdle. Mr. Drysdale, my mistake. Okay. All in favor, please signify. And Anne, can I get your vote on that?
Yes.
Okay. And those opposed? Mr. Mailman stands opposed. So that is carried. We'll move on to the next item, which is Area 2. Okay.
What page is that on?
All right. Area 2 is currently zoned institutional but there's undeveloped properties there that have the potential for other commercial or residential use. The current permitted uses are restrictive to those that are listed in the institutional zone. Staff are recommending to rezone the undeveloped MODL property from the institutional to general commercial. So last time when it came to council, or sorry, to PAC, it was, we had talked about, I keep moving my mouse, let me get my pointer. We had talked about the institutional zone as a whole. Staff's since revised that to just rezoning this parcel, it's been a long day, from institutional to the general commercial over here. We did receive some feedback or some concern from the CSAP, which is the French School Board, concerned about student safety if we were to rezone and allow other uses in the institutional zone. But limiting it to the MODL property limits, you know, the other properties would still be remain institutional zone. For this one, just on the zoning map, this is what it would look like on the zoning map. But when you do a zoning map amendment, you also have to change the future land use map to change the designation, so it would be from the community designation to the enterprise. The
Area 3.
Oh, we already went to Area 3. Look at that. Yeah. I do have a just 1 second. I want to make sure I got my other slide. Yeah, just to review the, we didn't have this feedback from the CSAP at the last meeting. I just want to make sure I covered everything. The commercial uses near the school may, they've said they may present a risk to student safety. Concerns that the zone changes to the institutional zone may limit the school's ability to expand in the future, as the school is currently at capacity. And mentioned staff's recommending that we narrow down the scope of Area 2 to only rezone the vacant municipal property, the uses permitted in the general commercial zone, include all the uses that are permitted in the institutional zone. There's also the general commercial zone also has a requirement that requires drinking establishments to be, or alcohol-related uses to be located 500 meters away from an institutional zone. So, say a microbrewery would not be permitted on that municipal property. It's too close to the school. And other adjacent lots, or sorry, other adjacent vacant lots in the institutional zone are available and actually owned by the province that would be there should the decision be made to expand the school.
Any questions from the members of the committee? Kathy's still got her mic on.
Oh.
Okay, seeing none. The general commercial that, oh no, we did just go over that. That also includes residential uses. So that's,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. In that case, if somebody would care to put forward the motion for Area 2. I'm going to call on one of you if one of you doesn't put your hand up. Mr. Drysdale.
Council approved the proposed amendments to the Osprey Village Secondary Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw to rezone and redesignate the property of PID 60730413 from the institutional IN zone to the general commercial GC zone under the enterprise designation.
And will somebody second that, please? Seconded by Councillor Moore. All those in favor, please signify. And Ms. Mack?
Aye.
That is carried unanimously. We'll move on to the third area.
All right. The third area is the high density, I'll start over here on this map, is the currently zoned R3. Let me get my laser pointer again. This here on the left hand, this is the current map. It's proposed to go to the open space zone. This one, again, is owned by the municipality. We did have a few developers look at that for potential housing developments. However, from the size of the property and the development constraints from the soil, there's a water course, it was very limiting. It's also the slope, like it's kind of low-lying. It wasn't the best for development. So it's being recommended that we take that out of the residential R3 zone and put that in the open space zone. Again, this is what it shows, what it would look like. This is R3 going to open space. And just for context, this other green line is the current trail that's here next door. So we would abut that trail at the bottom. Again, anytime you do a zoning change and you change the if the zone doesn't fall within the planning strategy designation, you also have to change the future land use map. So again, going from residential to community use for that. And I already did that one, so yeah.
Okay, are there any questions from the committee? Go ahead, Mr. Drysdale.
Just a simple question, I think, is at any point did we consider converting the R3 to GC, to general commercial, just given that it abuts a commercial piece of land and developers don't seem to mind putting rock in to fill low-lying areas? So just a curiosity question. I don't take exception to what you're recommending.
Yeah, I think the limitations on that lot, you know, whether it's a residential building or a commercial building, it's the development constraints are too much. Like it's not a suitable site to develop.
And I have one question. Is the plan to leave it virtually untouched, or are we going to develop it into any kind of park space where it abuts the trail?
Yeah, so this would change the zoning. Again, the municipality owns the property, but that would be a future, you know, what council wants to do with that property would be a future decision for council to make. But you could put a park, some park benches, and have a picnic area. I think as more and more residential development occurs in Osprey Village, you'll probably see a higher demand for some open space. But that, what council does with that for parkland, whether you sit on it or you develop it, that will be a future decision of council.
Okay, if there are no further questions, I'll look for the motion that applies to Area 3. Go ahead, Kathy.
I move that the Planning Advisory Committee respectfully recommend to Municipal Council that Council approve the proposed amendments to the Osprey Village Secondary Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw to rezone and redesignate the property of PID 607-27641 from the high-density residential R3 zone to the open space OS zone under the community designation, and I so move.
And could somebody second that, please? Oh, okay, Mr.
Hurdle. I can second it.
Oh. I recalled Mr. Hurdle, so I think we're going to go with him.
No worries.
Thanks, Ms. Meck. Okay, all in favor, please signify. And Ms. Meck?
Aye.
Okay, carried unanimously. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Merrill.
So the next steps, so those recommendations will go to the next council, and if council deems it advisable, they may, well, if they deem it advisable, they'll conduct first reading, and if they do that, they'll set a date and time for a public hearing, and not until after council's considered any of the public feedback can you council make a decision. So they will do a second reading, so those dates will be determined, and notifications will go out in the newspaper as well as on our Engage website.
Okay, excellent. There being no further business on the agenda, our next meeting date is scheduled for Thursday, May 22nd. And I think with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.